Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. I'm here with the group. I got Wade McFall here, retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office of the OIG and now a manager on our SIU team wearing an appropriate advised uniform. It's good to see that the collar doesn't look like it's buttoned to the neck, like you're Southern California gangster, I guess, is kind of the best way to describe it. And I've got, of course, Matt Kachansky, retired executive from HHS OIG, the retired Northeast UPIC director, and our payment integrity director, who's wearing his casual Wednesday shirt, non-advised. Yeah, because you're a shark. I mean, that's just a way to put it. So today we want to continue to revisit and continue to talk about something that we're putting out on our, we've been really talking a lot about this the past few days on LinkedIn. We've sent out some email blasts. It's going to be in our newsletter on Friday. And, you know, Matt, you wrote a great blog that I think we've got coming out, if it hasn't come out, but coming off of the song Promises, Promises, that 80s new wave hit. And it really is. We're talking today about promises, promises, promises that come out of SIUs to the leadership of the payer, promises that come out of vendors to the plan. And, you know, when we talk about promises, it's over-promising, under-delivering. And I think that is unfortunately a consistent. We've had a number of meetings this week with our current clients, and we've got some meetings with prospective clients, and the theme that we've heard from all of them with respect to some of the vendors that they have is this failure to level set and this premise of promises, promises. And I think it really does start from the investigative perspective. And so, Wade, I want to start with you because it really does become part and parcel to coming back to mentoring, training, and educating the staff and taking conservative approaches to thinking about what exposure in a case may be, what the offset might be, what the legitimacy of the recovery might be, using prior years' successes as a benchmark for future successes. And the one thing that I want to start to talk about is, and let's talk about this kind of globally, but OIG and then relative, is, you know, each year, right, you always have to come up with your predictions of what you think your stats are going to look like, your recovered dollars. And, you know, we took a very conservative approach in New York that unless the provider was under indictment and information had been filed, there was a plea agreement in place, a settlement was in negotiations, that we really didn't count anything other than those things. And the important factor of that is being sure that we weren't over-promising and under-delivering. And so, you know, the real piece of that puzzle is oftentimes when SIUs talk about exposure, and I always want to put that into air quotes because I think everybody's definition of exposure is a little different. And, you know, for us, I think we think of exposure a little bit differently than, you know, where a plan might think of exposure. But let's talk a little bit about the, you know, the expectation and that level setting and understanding what does exposure really mean versus what is it that people kind of think it means.
Yeah, well, you make some good points as far as like predicting what your staff will have. You know, it's something that kind of rolls uphill. You have to, like, as a ASAC, I'd have to talk to my agents and find out what their kind of predictions were for the year. And that can be difficult because there's so many moving parts. And one of the things you have to look at is the timing, as you mentioned. You're thinking that you might have an indictment or some charging document by the end of the year, and those things always get pushed back. Same thing with, we'll get into the exposure issue, but you want to have, you know, you want to come across as it looks like you're going to have a productive year when you're reporting up the chain, but you have to follow through because nothing is worse than saying I'm going to have 20 indictments by the end of the year and you show up with five. And there's a lot of reasons why that could happen, but you have to be conservative in that kind of prediction and take a real hard look at what, you know, what your investigative plan is for each case over the year, and are you really going to be able to get to that point by the time frame of the whatever it is, the fiscal year, the calendar year. As far as exposure, that's another thing. We kind of look at would look at cases on two different angles from as far as criminal convictions and like recoveries or civil type recoveries in civil cases. But you brought up exposure, and a lot of times people get confused with that as far as you might have a case where, let's say it's an upcoding, just for easy, it's an upcoding E&M code that, and I'll use super basic numbers just to try and, I guess, tell the story. But if you have a case where, let's just say it's you're looking at $1 million was paid for whatever 99214 or something like that. And theoretically, your argument is that it was upcoded and it should have been paid at a lower amount. So instead of saying it's paid at $100, it should have been paid at $75 or $50, let's say $50. So your exposure at the end is not really that $1 million that was paid for the code. It's really the difference between what was paid out fraudulently, but as opposed to what would have been paid if it was billed correctly. Now, this is just like one incident or instance, very simplified. But I think a lot of times, and I think we were probably guilty of that in the OIG at some points too, where you're talking about exposure. Exposure does not equal like recovery or what the total fraudulent amount is. It should be really the amount that should have been paid, or the amount that was paid over what should have been paid is really what your exposure is. And that's, I think, gets lost with a lot of people, but that's kind of a overly simplified way of it, kind of trying to understand what exposure is versus what just the total payment was.
Well, and part of that argument or part of that discussion is, let's use your example. A provider got paid $1 million for a 99214, and the allegation is upcoding. The exposure may not be $1 million, first of all, for part of the reason is, should it have been on 99212 or 99213? So the loss amount is really the delta, right? As you explained. But the other piece is that a portion of those services, right? I love to say this, but a broken clock is right twice a day. So a 99214 might actually be legitimate in some instances. So the exposure number is not the cumulative amount that a provider was paid for that service, unless the allegation is that the entirety of the universe of that CPT code was services not rendered or misrepresenting some malfeasance or fraud that says, hey, the entirety of this code is fraudulent, right? When you work a case, for example, where a service is not rendered and it's been, at least from a credible allegation, a fraud argument that the entirety of that service, it was never rendered. It's not even like, for example, what if the provider didn't even have the piece of equipment to do that item, service, or procedure, or they just never did it in their practice, and the allegation is, that's the allegation. Then your exposure is the universe of the dollars paid for that procedure, right? Like I had a case a couple years ago I worked on here at Advise where we were working on a self-disclosure with a provider who was billing for an ocular implant for people who had infections. Well, he didn't have the implant. He never rendered it. It was an entirely fabricated CPT code. The entire universe of that CPT code was the exposure. But what if he actually had some limited supply of this product and rendered it for periods of time? The exposure isn't the full amount, it's that percentage. But then you get even more granular to your example, Wade, is when you're talking about an instance of upcoding or an instance where the code should be something different, the exposure is not that amount. It's that delta. And I think that what the problem that we see is that plans are oftentimes indicating an exposure that is not at, it's artificially created number because they're looking at what they paid in total for an item, service, or procedure for which they haven't even identified what percentage of that may or may not be accurate. So, Matt, I want to go to you because you wrote the blog and you oftentimes when you write a lot of these, you do make a musical reference. You and I are both very interested in music, and you make a lot of relevant references to pop culture and music. And so Promises, Promises is really that. It's under delivering and over promising. And I think what really sparked us on this was we had a conversation with a plan SIU payment integrity team the other day, And they told us that one of the biggest problems that they have with their current vendor is this incessant overpromising and underdelivering. And we have found out that a number of plans have been getting similar overpromising and underdelivering. And in this one plan, there was a promise of something like $15 or $20 million in recoveries last year, or identified exposure, and it was a $5 million, you know, year. And so they had 25%. They, you know, you could look at it like anything else. Is the glass half full or half empty? They had a, they failed 75%, or they succeeded at 25%. I guess it depends, but you know, that becomes part of that metric. And, you know, you got to be able to be successful by having things that are realistic. And, you know, not that I'm making this indirectly, I guess, a sales pitch, but, you know, your team has had some amazing successes, and you did it through conservative estimations of recovery to get to that point.
Right. And very de-emphasized the recoveries. You know, what we would promise, and what my blog is about, is you can make promises. If you're a, you know, if you're putting in a bid or an RFP, or you're trying to sell your wares to a plan as a vendor, you have to make promises. You have to make, you know, a sales pitch, but it needs to be based on things you can control. You know, you can't control restitution amounts because there are so many variables outside of the control of an SIU. The state or a U.S. attorney's office may take your biggest cases and you don't see them again. So, you know, that restitution is off the table. A provider quits the plan and doesn't pay back the money. That restitution is gone. So those are promises you haven't kept because someone else's actions dictated the bad or the negative outcome to your promise. What you can promise are the things you can control. And this is what we promised to our clients is we are going to give you quality work, and we have the processes and methodologies and quality assurance methods in place to ensure that that quality work is in place. We are going to do it timely, and here are the metrics that we are using for our timeliness in terms of how long it's going to take us to look at a lead, how long will it take us to do a medical review or a coding review or audit of a medical record, and how long it should take us to complete the investigation and identify the overpayment or not. And there, so those types of things, you know, how many referrals you're going to make, we can make promises on, we will increase the referrals. We can't put a raw number on that, but we can say those referrals will not be rejected because of lack of quality, because here are the things we are doing to make sure that they are of the highest quality. And based on those promises and keeping those promises, the end result, the numbers of accepted referrals, then the amount of money coming back in, those things will go up as a natural byproduct of good work. And that's what you can promise.
Right.
And then once you've done that and you have a past performance, you can start making some estimates on, here's what we've done in the past with these other plans. So we can probably do something like that here. And eventually these numbers are going to go up based on the increase in quality that we're giving you. With our, you know, I took over the SIU at the beginning of this year after a couple of months of getting involved and interrelating with the clients and doing all this stuff. You know, we've identified $5.6 million in overpayments that we are now, you know, on the road to collecting. Will we collect all of those? Probably not, but we've identified them, and now we're using our resources to collect them as we identify more. And that is, you know, it's a large increase over what we were doing before. And it's because of these things that we've put in place. And we promised nothing more than that to these clients. Now that they've seen the work that we're doing, you know, we believe that the recoveries are going to get more and more because we've got this process down. And so these, you know, these recoveries are going to get bigger, you know. And the downside to, you know, promises, if you naked eyes, the last stanza is, why would I believe? That's the person who's receiving those promises and not getting, you know, what they're being promised. They start to doubt everything that you're saying. And pretty soon they're going to have conversations with other vendors, like Eric's been having conversations with these clients saying, we've got people that are, you know, they're routinely overpromising and underproducing. That's the why, what I believe, they're going someplace else.
Well, and then, you know, that brings, you know, the point that you make, to me, the most important point is your past performance, your past experience is an indicator of your future success. And, you know, one of the things I think is important is that what an SIU can really do is look over the past 12 months, 24, 36, what has been your average recovery percentage, not dollars, because every case is different. On average, you identified X number of dollars as being at risk. You recovered X minus, because it's never dollar for dollar. What is that as a percentage of the whole? And that should be your indicator for future performance. Because if you do it on a percentage basis, if you recovered $1 million and that was 50% of your exposed amount, and next year you're looking to recover $2 million, but you still keep your 50%. Your dollar amounts are going to grow, but your percentage is going to grow. And you can have an apples to apples analysis because you're keeping things consistent. Your methodology is consistent, all of those pieces. And then you're not over promising and under delivering. Now, part of that is that as a vendor, vendors are going to over promise and under deliver in those cases. It's up to the plan to hold the vendor accountable. Like you told us 20 million. And one of the questions that I would have is, how did you get to 20 million or 15 million? How did you get to that number? What did you have as your actionable intelligence to get that? You know, we have a plan that we do medical record reviews for, and we cannot stress the value of record reviews. This one client, this year alone, we have identified overpayments in excess of $12 million from the time period, I believe, of April to today. We're just about at $13 million. Last year, they had a 5,700% ROI. It sounds insane. But last year, they had a 5,700% ROI. How was that calculated? We looked at what they paid us as a vendor relative to what we identified as overpayments. It was 5,700%. Now, are they collecting all of that money as you identified, Matt? Probably not. But even if they collect 50 cents on the dollar or 40 cents on the dollar, their ROI is through the roof. Just for the portion of work that we did. We are on target with this one particular client to exceed that. We've recovered already $3 or $4 million over last year, and that's only from April to now, and the year is not over. And our record review, now granted, we're also hitting larger dollar fraud schemes, right? Genetic testing, laboratory schemes, DME, home health, hospice, we're hitting the big ones. But you know, the nearly going on 6 million that advises SIU has identified in overpayments is really fairly substantial, considering that some of our client mix include very small plans in New York that are required of SIUs, where we're talking about 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 members. And so, you know, the expectations are going to be in line because we're, you know, we're finding these and, you know, those promises have to be with, we're relying upon what we've done in past years. You know, we go back to some of these clients and we say, if you had a bigger budget for more medical record reviews, this is what you're going to see. So, you know, it's an important piece. So as we wrap up, and we've been going for a long time, because this is the bread and butter, right? When we really get down to it, Wade, I want to go to you, because one of the biggest things that always happens is, you know, projections are always missed. OIG, we always missed projections. I can't tell you how many times, you know, you'd be at a meeting and we would hear management say, you know, hey, they wouldn't call you out by name, but they'd say, hey, we're halfway through the year and everybody projected that they were going to have X number of dollars, X number of this. We need a recalibration. You shouldn't have to wait 6 months into the year to have those conversations. You should be scrutinizing as you're looking at each case and being willing to go back and have conversations with leadership about, hey, I know we thought that this exposure was $1 million. It's really not. And here's why, right? It's making sure that your promise is promises. It's not to say that you can't have a change in your position. You know, not to make this a political thing, but politicians change their position because of an evolution of belief, understanding, theory. Sometimes they have a change in their policy just to make people happy. But, you know, but generally speaking, right, it's that level set should not be something that's discounted. People should be able to go and have conversations with their SIU leadership and amongst themselves to have those recalibrations while the investigation is going. $1 million today could be $100,000 tomorrow just because the facts change.
Right. And as long as it's the change is due to circumstances that are typical for an investigation where things are changing all the time. And as Matt said, it's things you can't control. There's going to be changes. And as long as you realize that, and like you say, maybe quarterly you readjust, reassess, see where you are. And as long as it's not due to, you know, the investigator dropping the ball and they haven't been getting certain tasks done or they're not done in a timely manner, as long as it's the result of the normal kind of processes that happen in an investigation, there's no shame in having to readjust the numbers because
right.
you were hopefully being conservative up front, but just the nature of investigations and the way things play out, it's going to happen. And the investigators shouldn't be like hesitant to reassess them because the supervisors should know that these things happen in investigations. It's just a matter of staying on top of where it is and where it's going. And again, it's as long as it's things that happen naturally and are expected to happen in investigations, it's fine. As long as it's not based on a lack of, output work from the investigator, or even like a bad investigative, right. Even if it's a bad investigative plan, reassess it, get it back on track quarterly, and don't wait till the end of the year when you've predicted X amount and you've got, 25% of that.
Right.
It's just a matter of keeping up with it.
And it's going to get back to case management and documenting. And, when you have that recalibration, you should be writing something to the case file to say, something to the effect of, as this investigation is progressing, this recalibration is occurring, and here's the reason why. I think for me, the big take home is always that the word exposure should never mean the entirety of the universe of what the code was that was paid, unless the allegation includes a service is not rendered or misrepresentation or some plus factor that shows you that the entirety of that code is fraudulent. Unless you can demonstrate somehow that the entirety of that code is fraudulent, your exposure is not the full amount. Your exposure is the delta. If it was a different code, it is not the full amount. And there has to be a tectonic shift in the way that we in the payer side of investigations look at that. The OIG, we never looked at the exposure as being the full amount. We would get those referrals from the UPIC or the ZPIC or whoever it was at the time. And we always looked at that number with a grain of salt because it could never be, unless the facts of the case supported an allegation entirely of services not rendered, not partially, entirely, or a misrepresentation to make it a covered service when it's uncovered, but some plus factor, the universe is never the exposure amount. And we could debate that forever, but, I think on the payer side, where it becomes an issue is when somebody thinks that the exposure is $1 million and they go and they recover $100,000 and someone is saying, hey, you fell short by 90%. Did you fall short of 90%? Or was there, as Wade, you put it, was there this recalibration and the amount is not $1 million? Maybe the amount is 150. And in that case, you recovered $100,000. You recovered, 66% of, versus 10%. And that goes a long way. And you're not juking the numbers or manipulating the numbers. You're level setting to what it should have been. So ongoing discussion. And as a vendor, we want that challenge. We're not here to overpromise and under deliver. We want to make legitimate numbers. We want to make them work, because when we have a contract with a client that goes 3, 4, 5 years, we want that contract to last and be renewed. We don't want somebody coming back to us in a year and saying, hey, you didn't live up to your expectation. We're seeing that with some of the, you know, some of the firms that have, some of the payers that have reached out to us are reaching out to us specifically because of that. So, you know, be honest with who you're, you know, be honest with who you're potentially dealing with, and you'll, you know, it may go a long way. So look out for the blog. It's, you know, it's out there. Promises, promises. Matt Kachansky's musings. Also at the great Naked Eyes tune from the 80s. I guess, you know, if you listen to 80s music, you'll get it. If you don't listen to 80s music, well, YouTube it for you kids out there and enjoy listening to some Naked Eyes. As
Child
always.
Child of MTV.
That's it. That's it. So as always, you know, good, important stuff. Continue to get our newsletter every Friday. It comes right to your inbox. You can get all of our weekly podcasts. LinkedIn Live yesterday was a great success that we did the other day with Dina Bland. Phenomenal success. We had a lot of people on that. Our YouTube channel is getting a lot of subscribers. You can get all of our prior podcasts, LinkedIn Lives, on our YouTube channel. You can subscribe as well as the newsletter through Advise Health, ADVIZEHealth.com. You can get our newsletter there. So until next time, we will see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you.